Well met, and welcome to episode 159, the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for September the 3rd, 2017. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. Greetings! This is Bill Walthall, and in this podcast, we conclude our two-month-long discussion of The Winter's Tale with a directorial concept and cast and a concluding discussion of the play. Now, if you've been around the project for more than a play or two, you know I like to present a directorial concept and cast as part of my podcast wrap-up. This play, though, with its weird production questions, makes me want to approach this a little differently. Less to do with cast or even really strict concept, but more on those weird points. There are three points for me that have to be addressed. The best stage direction ever, that final scene, but let's begin with something that will bring them all together. That choric character of time. At least in Pericles, Gower was all over that place, so that when he showed up and said, "Hey guys, let's skip a dozen or so years," it kind of made sense. But here in The Winter's Tale, we have no such choric figure, just time, who shows up after Act 3 ends, having taken us to Bohemia, to tell us about our skipping of 16 years. So how do you present that on stage? Well, first of all, when do you present it? Before intermission? After intermission? Split it? Now, as bizarre as it sounds, I think you could split it, perhaps after this following section, your patience this allowing. I turn my glass and give my scene such growing as you had slept between. Leontes leaving, the effects of his fond jealousies so grieving that he shuts up himself. Imagine me, gentle spectators, that now I may be in fair Bohemia. Now, of course, that's kind of problematic because that would mean the second half of the play would begin with the lines, "And remember well, I mentioned a son of the king's, which Florizel I now name to you, and with speed so pace this speak of Perdita, now grown in grace equal with wondering." So beginning mid-speech would be kind of weird, you know, beginning with a reference to something that never happened, you know, that mention of a son of Polixenes. So that's a little bizarre and kind of hard to explain away. Of course, it's hard enough to explain anyway without the speech straddling intermission, unless time is a playwright-like figure, one who is actually controlling the action. However, having the second half begin like that might just work to show how time can make our memories and perception a little less than factual and historical. So, okay, let's say we do split the difference. That means we've conquered the question of when, but there's one more question that I think needs to be answered, and that's who. Who is time, or rather, who plays time? You could, of course, give the role to an actor who plays no other role, or one that plays some minor roles throughout the play. As did Peter Wood, the director of a 1960 production. He went one step further and pulled a page from Pericles and presented a dumb show, complete with an aging Leontes and a growing Florizel and Perdita. And I like the approach taken by Darko Trezenac at the Old Globe in 2005. A female time, presented almost as a Virgin Mary in the Pietà, holding a Christ-like Hermione? Kind of dig that. So you could do with an actor for just that role. But what if you didn't? A couple of days back, in the blog, I floated the idea of possibly having the actor who plays Leontes also play time, because of that repeated wide gap of time that is rhetorically used in both of their speeches. It could work for those reasons. Now, according to the Oxford New Shakespeare's Critical Reference Edition, the actor playing Leontes could play time, as well as any actor other than those playing the roles of Camillo, Polixenes, Clown, Shepherd, Antigonus, or Mariner, because those characters are in the scenes that surround the time choric scene. Now, the 1976 Royal Shakespeare Company production, directed by Trevor Nunn and John Barton, cast the same actor for time and the bear. It was actually time with a bear mask. That could work. But my mind keeps going back to that Old Globe production, so much so that it gives me an idea. You could stage it so that Act 3, Scene 2 doesn't end with Paulina and Leontes' exit, but rather with a pitying and seated Paulina rocking an emotionally and physically spent Leontes in her arms, a la that 2005 production's Pietà. They are left on stage as the third act's bohemia scene plays out. The bear, and I'll explain this more in detail in a minute, would be conveyed by an actor in a bear skin, not a bear suit, who would then drape the bear skin over a shivering Leontes. The scene would end, lighting would shift, and Paulina would cover Leontes further on her lap, would then become time, presenting the first 21 lines of that speech. Blackout. Now, before I get to the second half of the time chorus, let's hit that stage direction. I see Antigonus being driven off by a frightening silhouette, a shadow. And then the actor in the bearskin comes in. And here I'm going to mash up some other earlier productions. In that 1976 Nun Barton production, the bear is foreshadowed by Polixenes using a bearskin blanket to become a bear that Mamilius hunts in a play-acting game. In 2005, the Propeller Theater troupe out of England performed the play in New York City, and in this production, the bear was foreshadowed by Mamilius in a bear suit earlier in the play, and when the bear arrives on stage, it's actually the dead boy's toy bear. I like the absurdity of that. So I'd want the shadow to be frightening, to make it understandable how Antigonus could have been run off. But when the bear comes onto the stage, it's the ghost of Mamilius with that bear skin. Almost farcical because of the boy, uncanny because of the ghost. He pulls off the skin and then comes across the stage, dragging it along with him like a little boy's blanket, until he drapes it on the body of his father. And then we get the Paulina is time bit, as I described before. Then, coming out of the intermission, the lights would come up on an older Paulina, again seated Pieta-like, with a bare skin-covered body across her lap. She begins the speech at line 15 so that section with Leontes leaving is repeated. And at the word Leontes, she would pull off the skin to reveal, now, Hermione on her lap, looking 16 years older. Paulina kisses Hermione on the forehead. The queen awakes, rises, and makes her way towards the exit. This should seem naturalistic, not magical. Paulina stands and continues the speech. When she hits the Florizel line, Hermione would turn back, and there would be a beat there, a shared moment between the two women, as Hermione remembers. As Paulina ends the speech, with Hermione listening all the while, the two exit together, hand in hand. I think this could work, especially since I'm convinced that the play's reveal in that final scene is no miracle, merely a revelation, and this would make that more transparent to the audience. And in that final scene, we would see the women preparing for the revelation before the entrance of Leontes and his party. I want no doubt that this is not magic. In fact, I think that when Hermione speaks of the oracle, the queen will reveal a scroll with the oracle's message, looking like the one that was delivered back in Act 3, and hand it to Leontes. This is how I think it could work. Now, for a cast, I really don't know. I've been thinking so much about the staging, I haven't really given the cast much thought, but I'd love to hear your ideas on it. Leave your suggestions in the comment thread to this podcast. Shakespeare fans, need a poster to hang in your room? Teachers, need some nifty handouts for your students to peruse as you introduce them to the Bard? Or are you just in the mood for some printable versions of some of the cool infographics found on this website? Well, regardless of how you answered those questions, I've got a scratch for that itch, a solution for that problem. Check out the Bill Shakespeare Project page on the Teachers Pay Teachers website. You can find character maps for Romeo and Juliet and Julius Caesar, previewing the characters and their relationships to one another. I've also got geographical maps so your students can wrap their heads around travels within the plays Troilus and Cressida. Yes, even TNC gets some love. All's Well That Ends Well as well. See what I did there? Plus Pericles and Othello. There's also handouts on the so-called history in Macbeth and Julius Caesar, time in Romeo and Juliet, and violence in Titus Andronicus. Also, you'll find entire packets of handouts for both King Lear and Macbeth, including scene-by-scene timelines and the interactions as well as relationships between the characters. And I'll be adding even more soon. Plus, this is where you can find the printable version of the new and improved periodic table of Shakespeare. Some of these are for free, and some are for purchase, but all can be found on the Bill Shakespeare Project page on teacherspayteachers.com. Oh, and if you want to purchase a pre-printed poster-sized version of that periodic table, Well, then head on over to the Bill Shakespeare Project page on redbubble.com. Links to both of these sites can be found in the left-hand margin of this website. So, The Winter's Tale. As I say goodbye to this play, and as I noted a little while back, I'm grappling with a number of issues, especially from a dramaturgical point of view. I mean, how do you realistically, I know, dangerous presumption, present Leontes's 0-60 jealousy rave-up? The bear, Autolycus and the seemingly interminable sheep-shearing fest and its fallout. That last scene. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are some great things here. Paulina, the bear on the page at least, the ambiguity of that reveal at the end, again, on the page. Are you noticing a trend here? I enjoyed the play as a reading experience, kind of, but the damned thing wasn't written to be read. It was meant to be wrought. It was meant to be brought to life on stage. And honestly, I've never seen a satisfying production. Compare this to Pericles, which seemed at least a little weak or just plain weird on the page, but I've never seen fail on the stage. And so, if I've got to rank them, this has to go behind Pericles, and way behind Pericles. Bottom, thus far, of all the romances. So sue me, I find, maybe in hindsight, Cymbeline almost charming in comparison to this one, and in the bottom third of all the canon. I think I'm probably dinging it in ways it probably doesn't deserve, but still, it just doesn't float my boat. Regardless, it's time to say goodbye to both Sicilia and Bohemia, get on a boat that does float, and head off to some deserted island. But be careful of some storms ahead. Now, if you've enjoyed this podcast, but you haven't been following along with our daily blog entry since our last regular podcast, you've missed out on subjects including Hamilton. Seriously, dude? Really? The Winter's Tale, by the numbers. The Winter's Tale, midpoint? In the news, does spelling matter? The Winter's Tale stage directions, wide gaps in casting, time enough at last, exit pursued by a tempest, new month, last, air quotes, play, a re-evaluation. So, if you'd like more in-depth discussions or just want a daily fix, check out the blog entries at thebillshakespeareproject.com or become a fan of our Facebook page or Twitter feed. Remember that those social media outlets are more for Shakespeare news and notes than for discussions of our current play under study. And also, if you ever have any question or comment about this or any other Bill Shakespeare Project podcast or blog entry, you can always lob me an email at bill@thebillshakespeareproject.com. And join us again for our next podcast when we'll kick off The Tempest with an introduction and a probably jumbo economy-sized plot summary. Hope to see you then. You've been listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for September the 3rd, 2017. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. And we shall see thee anon.